Pagan Teogony and Cosmogony 221. In the terms of the ancient symbolism, the one becomes the two. The first of these agents, ether, is called the bound. Because as a symbol of primordial activity it is limited as to place, condition, and duration. Chaos, which in some systems of cosmogony is elevated to the position of first deity, takes second place, when compared to the enduring wholeness. Being unlimited, unorganized, and without sense of time, it is properly termed infinity. These two opposites, bound and infinity, acting each upon the other, destroy the placidity of the eternal state. Ether, the active agent, is symbolized as a vast whirlwind which moves the surface of chaos, and out of its unorganized substances forms a great ovoid, termed by the ancients the Orphic or cosmic egg. This egg is usually represented as encircled by the coils of a great serpent, the ether. The substances of the egg, having been impregnated by the divine ether, increase from within outward. The fertilized egg expands and finally bursts asunder to reveal the triple dragon god Fans, who is called the divine or absolute animal. Fans is described as an incorporeal god, bearing golden wings on his shoulders, but in his inward parts naturally possessing the heads of bulls, upon which heads a mighty dragon appears, invested with the various forms of wild beasts. The point is also repeatedly emphasized that Fans, while possessing wings and a human head, is without a body, his entire being consisting of a vast ring of radiant effulgence. The ancient commentaries, especially those of the Neoplatonists, identify Fans with the cherubim of Ezekiel and the composite monster of the Chaldaic Egyptian mysteries. The bull's head signify the constellation of Taurus, the lion's head, which Fans is sometimes said to have, is the constellation of Leo, the dragon is the constellation of Scorpio, and the human head with wings upon its neck is the constellation of the god-man, Aquarius. Thus the four hierarchies called the Lords of Generation Arc set forth. In the Christian system these animals and winged creatures are ascribed to the four evangelists to indicate that the Gospels are the source of spiritual life. The specially emphasized fact 222 L lectures onancientphilosophy that the head of Fans is without a body reminds the disciple that the lower or bodily universe has not yet become objectified, but remains as an unapplied idea of the first deity. Several early mythologists divided the egg of cosmos into an upper and a lower hemisphere, the upper composed of gold and the lower of silver. Similarly, in the images of Zeus the eyes are sometimes inlaid with silver to indicate his sovereignty over the inferior, or lower, hemisphere of creation. It is also stated that after breaking open to release the radiant Fans, the upper part of the universal egg became the intellectual universe and the lower part the sensible universe. This is paralleled in the story of creation according to Genesis, where it is related that the waters which were above the heavens were divided from the waters which were below the firmament. The janterval between the two sundered hemispheres of the egg was called heaven, and here the light of Fans was diffused throughout the elements of the intelligible sphere. It is most significant that heaven should be located between the extremes of intellect and sense, since its correlate in the body the heart is situated between the intellectual nature above and the animal nature below. Fans is referred to as the triple god because he is a triad of powers, with himself as the principal, or monad, and Ericopaeus and Metis as his lesser aspects. As Fans represents spiritual light and life, it is natural that his consort, or Sakti, should represent spiritual darkness, or the medium through which this light manifests. The mother of the gods was there. For called threefold night, and she alone mingled in perfect union with Fans, who is described as giving to her his scepter, that she might in queenly manner rule his world. By right of her threefold powers night brought forth two children, the first of her progeny, called Heaven and Earth. The latter is to be understood as a divine cosmic earth, and not the terrace trial globe with which we are familiar. One of the chief sources of confusion in the study of ancient systems of cosmogony arises from the effort to relate such terms as earth and world to our own physical system, when in reality they refer to invisible superphysical spheres, the archetypes of the inferior generations. Pagan Teogony and Cosmogony 223, which arc to follow. The heaven and earth born of the union of night and Fans are the spheres of the noumenon and phenomenon which form such essential elements in the philosophy of Immanuel Kant. Heaven and earth are then united in marriage, and in the words of G.R.S. Mead, from their union arises a strange and curious progeny, the Fates, Parsi, Hundred-Handed, Senti, Mani, and they who see all round, Cyclopes. **. The Fates are the karmic powers, which adjust all things according to the causes of prior universe, while the Senti Mani and Cyclopes are the builders, or rather the overseers or noetic architects, who supervise the builders of the sensible universe. **. These were the first progeny of heaven and earth, and were cast down to Tartarus, for they worked within all things, and so, as evolution proceeded, permeated every kingdom of nature. But then, without the knowledge of heaven, earth brought forth, says Orpheus, Proctium, High 137, seven fair daughters, bright-eyed, pure, and seven princely sons, covered with hair. And these are called the avengers of their brethren. And the names of the daughters are Themis and Tethys, Mnemosyne, and Thea, Dione, and Phoebe, and Rhea, and of the sons, Coos, and Crius, Phorcy, and Cronus, Oceanus and Hyperion, and Iapetus, Procopat, V.295. And these are the Titans. See Orpheus. Under the leadership of Cronus, all the Titans save Oceanus rebelled against heaven and established the material sphere. Cronus became the ruler of the Titans, which position he held until Zeus, leading his giants, overthrew the empire of Cronus and established the physical universe. We are told in the commentaries that the last of the heavenly line is Bacchus, in whom the generations of Uranus, or heaven, are complete. In the Orphic Theogony then follows the order of the supermundane and mundane gods, with accounts of the heroes and those who were elevated to a parity with divinity because of the immortal spirit that led them to the pinnacle of achievement. This sublime philosophy, which clothes cosmic processes in personalities and reveals by their combinations the wonders of 224 lectures on Ancient philosophy, the intelligible sphere, has been debased to the point where it is now regarded as merely a collection of myths suitable only for the amusement of the adolescent and the dotard, or to furnish poets with the inspiration for a bare existence perpetuated. Thus in all its outer form in Bullfinch's Age of Fable, the ology by which Plato lived and died is now looked upon as something outlived or as having overshot the mark. The Orphics, however, thought truly and wrote well. Their theology cannot die, but shall survive every device created to destroy it, and in a more philosophic era in the future shall shine forth again with splendor undiminished. It is now established beyond reasonable doubt that the Vedic writings of the Hindus were the chief contributions to the exalt structure of Orphic theogony. It is even asserted that the first Orpheus was a Hindu. A number of early Greek philos offers, moreover prominent among them Thales and Pythagoras, were initiated into the mysteries of the Brahmans. There is also a legend to the effect that Osiris, the black god of Egypt, journeyed to that land from Asia, establishing in the double empire of the Nile his mysteries patterned after those of the Brahmans. Whether these founders of philosophic systems were actual personalities or personifications of their doctrines cannot be determined definitely at this late period. It is not at all improbable that the journeys presumably taken by such demigods as Orpheus and Osiris arcanely signify the migrations westward of the cults of the primitive Asiatic Aryans. When compared with the Oriental creation myths, it is evident that the Greek fables appear fragmentary and obscure, for the early Brahmin sages were unquestionably the greatest abstract thinkers whose doctrines have survived to this day. That eminent student of Vedic philosophy, the Honorable H.H. Wilson, in a footnote on Indian mythology and tradition, was moved to write, as, however, the Grecian accounts, and those of the Egyptians, are much more perplexed and unsatisfactory than those of the Hindus, it is most probable that we find amongst them the doctrine in its most original as well as most methodical and significant form. Having given a brief out Pagan Theogony and Cosmogony 225 line of the Orphic Cosmogony, we next turn to the more ancient Brahman theory in order to make possible a comparison between these two philosophic systems. The Vedic creation myth, as set forth in the opening chapters of the Vishnu Purana, may be summarized as follows. The sage, Parasara, discourses with his disciple, Maitreya, not the Bodhisattva, concerning Vasudev, the indwelling radiance, and how it came forth to manifest creation. Parasara begins his account with this prayer. Glory to the unchangeable, holy, eternal, supreme Vishnu. Of one universal nature, the mighty over all, to him who is Hiranyagarbha, Hari, and Sankara, the creator, the preserver, and destroyer of the world, to Vasudev, the liberator of his worshippers, to him whose essence is both single and manifold, who is both subtle and corporeal, indiscreet and discreet, to Vishnu, the cause of final emancipation. Glory to the Supreme Vishnu, the cause of the creation, existence, and end of this world, who is the root of the world, and who consists of the world. Upon completion of his prayer, Parasara enters upon the main theme of his discourse with the declaration that Brahma, the Supreme, Eternal, Unborn, Imperishable, and Undecaying Lord first exists in the forms of Purusha, Spirit, and Kala, Time. From Purusha next proceeded two other forms called the discrete and the indiscrete. Thus primary matter, spirit, visible substance, and time, are declared by the wise to be the pure and supreme condition of Vishnu, which is Brahma in the state of quiescence. In his opening prayer, Parasara refers to Vishnu, who, in the terms of the Greek Platonists, would be the power, or second person of the Brahmanic triad and consequently its active part, as Hiranyagarbha, meaning the Brahma who is born from the golden egg, Hari, which is Vishnu as the Lord of goodness, and Sankara, or Shiva, the destroyer, taking upon himself the capacity of Brahma. Vishnu becomes the creator, assuming the nature of Shiva, or Rudra, he is the destroyer, and in his true nature as Vishnu, he is in equilibrium between them.